Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. I got Jared, I got James with me in the studio today. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks
Appreciate
for having
it.
Us. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Excited.
Welcome to the show. First time?
First time, yep.
Second or third time?
Second or third time. Yeah. What did you talk about last time?
Last time, I believe, was in the truck. We were doing the truck topics, yeah. Tony and I. So we're just chatting about a relationship with Freightliner and, yeah.
One of the only episodes on the internet of a podcast in a Freightliner truck. I think that's a first.
Okay.
A world record, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's awesome. So, I appreciate you guys being willing to do this. And today we're talking about how you went from being brothers to being brothers and coworkers. And that journey, talking about your experience in military, some stories growing up, and what it's like to work together. So, yeah. Should be some fun time.
Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. Keep it light. Keep it friendly.
Yep.
Keep it light. Keep it fresh. Keep it friendly. All right. Well, to start here, I would like to know a little bit about yourselves, how long you've been at Nussbaum, and what do you do outside of work in your free time?
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm Jared Knight, dedicated account manager, and I've been here at Nussbaum since May 4th of 2021. So may the force be with you is how I remember that. So I'm not even a big Star Wars fan. I just remember it by that. But yeah. And then some things I like to do outside of work recently I've gotten into, actually since I came here to Nussbaum, is gardening and taking care of, we've got 19 chickens now.
Wow.
We went from 4 to 19 in a year, so yeah.
Did you always want to be a gardener and a farmer?
Not at all. No. I remember there were ag classes in high school, and I was like, I'll stay away from those. Like, but now I'm like, man, I wish I would have taken them because I love gardening and I love...
Loves his chickens.
I love his chickens.
He's a very protective chicken dad.
Yeah. The other day there was a dog that came after him and yeah.
He got in front of him and was like, yeah, I ain't getting my chickens.
Yep. Have you lost any chickens?
No, not yet.
That's
thankfully.
Incredible. You must have a good fence.
Yes, that and, well, yeah. Yeah, there might have been an owl situation that happened, but our chickens prevailed somehow.
Okay. So
it's a whole nother story.
Close call, yeah.
Yeah, it is a close call. Chickens are hard to take care of.
Yep.
You lay your life down for those chickens.
Oh, for sure.
That's cool. And so a little bit of that chicken... anything else?
I have a daughter. She's going to be 3 on the 31st of May. So a lot of my hobbies kind of went out the window besides the gardening and the chickens and stuff. But, I used to play a little guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I just love spending time with family.
And you're an account manager, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Yeah. Tell me about that role.
Sure. Dedicated account manager began with CNH when I got here and started in May. And then from there, I went to Morton Salt. So I handled the Morton Salt account there for a little while. And then now I'm with Lear. Mm. So I'm with the Lear dedicated accounts account manager. So.
Okay. Sweet. And we'll get more into what that means, but mm-hmm. just to give people an idea of where you're at. So sweet. James?
Yeah, so James Greer, Director of Fleet Service. I've been here now for about 10 and a half years. Started as a technician and did that for about 4 years. Moved to the office, started handling roadside as a roadside coordinator. And then I've been doing this now since 2021. It's been very enjoyable.
Hmm.
But yeah, outside of work, anything outdoors. We've got a camper at the Eureka Sportsman's Club. So any free chance we get, any free time as a family, we'd love to go out there. Camp, fish, just do walks around the lake. So really like being outside and newfound hobby that of mine is reading. Picked up a book a couple years ago and haven't put them down, so really enjoy reading lately.
Wow.
So
what do you like to read?
A little bit of everything. I love, and may sound awful, but I love self-help books. So I typically will do a self-help book, and then I'll mix in some fiction, and I'll go back to a self-help book. So, yeah.
Do you have a favorite self-help book?
Right now, my favorite book that I've read recently is The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really, really like that book. Actually bought
he
Jared
gave
a copy.
It to me. And, I still haven't read it yet.
Oh, come on, man.
He's too busy.
No, I'm actually, it's funny because he's given me 3 books now, and they're stacked on top of each other on my computer desk right now at home, and I've got to.
I saw him Sunday, and I was like, you're reading those books?
Yeah.
So. Cut some time out with your chickens.
Yeah, so I know.
Read some book.
I know.
I actually love that book. I just read it maybe 4 months ago.
So good.
Really good book.
Yeah, I want to read it again.
Yeah.
It's such a good one. It's a quick read, too.
It's 27 pages in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll get there.
But there's an audiobook version, so maybe you could do that one.
Yeah, we're give the book to somebody else. Yeah. Spread the love. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Spread the love.
Really good book.
Yeah. Do you have any takeaways from that?
The one thing that I noticed the most, I've reduced my screen time heavily, probably cut it in a third. But what I noticed the most that stands out or reminds me of that book is every time I'm at a grocery store and another line opens up, I don't move to it. I'm just like, you know what? Why am I in a rush? Like, let me just slow down. So just those little nuances that typically I'd be like, oh, I'm going to save 30 seconds if I jump around these two people. So that reminds me of the book quite often. Yeah, just getting away from the screen times and the importance of setting time aside for God was big, the importance of Sabbath and all that. Mm-hmm. So, I've truly just really enjoyed that book and its impact on my life. So,
yeah, I like the stuff they just had to say. It's good. So, life changing.
Definitely, 100% life changing.
Yeah, that's sweet. That could be you.
Sounds like I gotta pick this book up.
I told you.
And you guys are doing Spartan running too, is that right? Getting into that?
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah. There's a Microsoft Teams chat in the company, and there's quite a few people in there. And I think Jared Fair kind of joked, like, hey, we're going to go do the Beast, and we're going to do the 21K. And Jason Curtis and I have been kind of pushing ourselves all year doing push-ups, and we just started doing running. So when Jared Fair said that, we're like, you know what, let's do the Beast. So we're pretty locked in, and we've got a group of 5, maybe 6 people now. Jared says he's in. So
I'm in. I'll do it.
Okay.
But I might be a little slower.
Hey.
So.
Hey.
No worries.
You can still do it.
Do it as a team.
It's about the obstacles, right? Like there's kind of some big obstacles and stuff like that. Yeah. Shock wire. They got that?
I don't know. I looked through a bunch. I know you jump over fire at the end. There's some ropes to climb, some lateral
walls.
I don't know
if I... It's quite,
you could do it.
Yeah.
It's a small jump.
Okay.
Yeah. But... yeah, no. I think it's more about just get everybody together outside of a work environment and just hanging out. So there's people in our department, outside of our department, and looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. They say that suffering brings people together more than anything else. So if you can do that together.
There's some truth to that.
There's a lot of truth to that. Yeah. I think just from the military, I mean, you could say there's a lot of stuff that a lot of guys have to suffer through, but you're all suffering through it together. So
that's a very unique experience, and that's a really good one to bring up. So to get into our topic, I have this little game icebreaker called Who's More Likely to Some Brother Banter. So I got some ones I want to read off real quick, statements, and then you can say the name of the person you think that is more likely to do this thing. So make sense?
Makes sense.
You guys ready?
Sure.
I think so.
All right, let's get into it. Who is more likely to be late to a meeting?
I'm always late to a meeting, so I would probably say myself.
I would say myself too. Okay. So that's tough. I think I was like 2 minutes late to this. So, but yeah, I would say myself. So maybe
based on the most recent meeting, Jared.
Yeah.
Okay. You're saying Jared. Okay.
That's fine.
All right. Who was the troublemaker growing up?
Me?
James.
Yeah.
Yeah. James, for sure.
I was very good at not getting caught, so my mom, if she ever watches this, she's going to be really, really upset. But yeah, I was a bit of a troublemaker. A lot of stories.
Yeah, you were just too good at it.
I was very good at not getting caught. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Who tells the better stories?
I'd say Jared.
Really? Wow. I'd say James.
Really?
I would, yeah.
Okay.
I can go off in to one direction talking about chickens, and James, I feel like, stays on track a little more than I do. But
sure.
Hey, I'd say myself.
Okay, there you go.
There you go.
Okay.
Better storyteller. Who is more organized?
Me.
James.
Yeah.
James.
Without a doubt?
Without a doubt.
That was a pretty quick answer.
Mm-hmm. I need to, I need to get a little more organized myself.
Yeah.
So.
Now, this next one's going to tell a little bit about yourself. Who would survive longer in a zombie apocalypse?
It would be James.
I was just curious what he was going to say.
It would be James.
I'm pretty confident.
Why do you say that? What makes him seem more like a zombie?
I think Branch is a service we both chose, and then life in general.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that one. It's probably the truth. Well, it depends on what kind of zombies it would be too, but you know.
What do you mean?
Well, if like they're like slow and.
So slow zombies you think you'd be better at?
Well,
and then, I don't know.
Let's think for a moment if these zombies know how to fly planes.
Oh.
You know.
I think we're all in trouble at that point.
Yeah, really in trouble there.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's surviving that one.
That's fair. Who is more likely to forget their lunch?
James.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It'd be James.
Okay.
It's either that or I just really don't like leftovers.
Yeah.
My wife would say I always forget lunch, and it's typically because I'd rather just eat out of the vending machine or go to lunch.
I was going to say probably because he's busy all the time, so he's probably like, well, I got, 15 minutes to kill. I'll grab something from the vending machine or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I bring lunch enough that it's like a habit. I've always been a run to lunch kind of guy.
Eat on the go kind of type thing. Yeah, makes sense.
Snacks in the desk drawer and
Last one. Who would be the first to volunteer for a crazy challenge? Not saying which one, just any crazy challenge.
I'd say me.
Yep.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm always doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tyler Dietrich a few months back ran into me out here by the Alden Room. It was just like, you doing any challenges this year? Scott Herman had asked, and Tyler was walking by, and he's like, what are you doing this year? And I was like, I started diving into the push-ups and stuff that we were doing, and Tyler just started laughing, like, wait, you're really doing, like, challenges? Like, it's odd that that's what he asked you when he just brushes past you. And I was like,
yeah,
I like challenging myself for things, so.
Yeah.
Book reading, push-ups, and now we're going to try to run some miles, so.
Yeah.
He's very competitive.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. A little too competitive now. It's a good thing.
It's healthy. Yeah. It's a healthy
thing. A goal setting. I think that's a good way. It's like you like to set goals, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You like to go after that.
Yeah, so. Trying to turn down the competitiveness and compete against myself.
Okay.
Set goals. Yeah,
But if you, beat some other people, then it's all right. It's an added bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good thing about you, and you can encourage. And I think that's the cool thing about having brothers, having siblings. You can look at each other's gifts, and you can learn from that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a little bit what we're talking about today, is life growing up as brothers, going from brothers to coworkers. So just to start with this topic, are there any fun stories that you'd like to share about growing up and what that looked like? Without throwing each other under the bus.
No, there were quite a few. There were some short ones, so I guess I could start with the short ones. But, I had to go to Mom Saturday and get some stories from her because I had a few, but I knew there were more. And she had brought up the school play where you played the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, man. Yep. I was the first male or boy to do it. So I was the Wicked Witch of the West for the fourth grade play. And I was pretty good.
You did really good.
I was pretty good.
Yeah. Did you don the green face paint? And
oh, yeah. I went all out. I came out from behind the curtain or whatever doing, come here, my pretty. It's not my proudest moment.
James is telling me that you're a pretty good actor, too. Like, when you do something, you own up to it. Like, you're not going to go half-hearted and do it, but you're going to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I give my 100% for anything that I'm doing.
Can you do the come here, Lou?
No way.
Hopefully you find the video, but... Oh man.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
It was good. He killed it. Mm-hmm. When we first found out he was doing it, it was kind of like, oh, that's a little different, but... I think he was just trying to one-up me. That's my competitiveness. I played Oz, and then he comes, and he's the Wicked Witch, the star of the show. So
I didn't know you played Oz.
I did, but that was like second grade, so I wasn't. You were very young then.
I was a baby.
You were like 2 or 3 years old, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he did really good, and we got to find the video because we were talking about it Saturday. And
yeah. Please don't find it.
We'll send it in.
Okay, if you find it. But it's all right if it just stays on the internet, wherever it's at. So yeah, so a little bit of acting.
I did, yeah. I wanted to be an actor when I was growing up.
Really?
I wanted to be like Jim Carrey. He was like my role model, if you will. I worked at my very first job was Conklin's Barn Theater. Mm-hmm. I was a dishwasher there.
No way.
In Goodfield for 3 years, two years. At the time, I really wanted to kind of transfer from dishwasher to actor and be on the stage. And life took a different direction. I'm happy it did.
We'll have to utilize those acting gifts here, you know, next ESOP share price reveal video or something like that.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, I'm up for whatever.
Yeah, your contract is open.
Okay. I have to get with my manager.
That's cool. So you worked at the Barn Theater, and did you do any acting there? Is that
No. I was just singing in the back, doing washing dishes for
sure.
Trying to show your talent from the back.
Oh, I was. Yeah,
yeah.
I was.
Yeah. So you sing and dance?
No dancing. No dancing. Yeah, I don't do much singing nowadays either. So okay.
Yeah, but. That's cool.
He did write a song. He mentioned he's a guitar player, and he wrote a song back when he was in London, and it was a really good song. Good lyrics and all.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So is that when you were in the military, you lived in London? So in this part of your story is you spent some time here at Nussbaum, and then you left and then came back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you were in London. Can you tell me about that?
Sure, yeah. So when I was in the military, I went from... Scott Air Force Base, Illinois, to Osan Air Base, South Korea. And then from South Korea, I went to the United Kingdom, and I spent 2.5 years there. It was supposed to just be two, but COVID kept me there a little longer. And then from there, I went to Ellsworth Air Force Base in Rapid City, South Dakota. And I lived there for about 6-7 months. And then as I was transitioning out, I talked to James, and James was like, hey, man, you know, you might be able to get on here, and it's a really great company. And I'm glad I took his advice because it is amazing here. From there, so I started out as a CAC, a customer account coordinator, and that is kind of, I think I wasn't here very long, I think about 5 months. And then the Air National Guard, I had training come up, and I had to leave for Wichita Falls, Texas, for about 5 or 6 months, and did my HVAC school training, and came back. So, yeah.
Wow. And that was through the military, your HVAC training. Correct. That's cool. So you're doing HVAC work in the military.
Correct. Yep.
Wow.
And before that, so while I was on active duty, I was ground transportation in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So I drove. It's the equivalent to 88 mic for any of the Army guys out there. I don't know what.
3510
for Marines. But it's just tractor trailer combinations.
Sure.
I drove bus, trained on ANVA standards and whatnot. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. So I did a little driving, just not over the road.
Sure. But and you get your CDL?
I can get it.
Okay.
It's like the military equivalent
to
a CDL, but I don't need it.
Sure. Yeah. If you ever want to, you could go that route.
Right.
Cool.
But Yeah, I don't know if I answered the question.
We have a couple more stories to share, and I'm kind of on the edge of my seat to hear some of the stories, especially this Christmas story.
Oh boy,
that one that really sounds interesting. So yeah, could you share some more of those stories about what it's like growing up? And you said your mom shared a couple with you, so you're
I think the Christmas one was more me paying Jared back. So I had to ask my mom how old we were, but I think I was 12. No, I was probably 13 or 14. So Jared's a twin. He's got a paternal twin that look. Oh, what am I doing? Not an identical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fraternal.
Yeah, fraternal.
Fraternal. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's
right.
Throwing me off. So he's got a fraternal twin, Ben. So they were both probably 5 or 6 years at that time, and we were wrestling. And I remember taking Ben, his brother, who was on my back, and I threw him. And as I threw him, my arm came down, and then here comes Jared and jumps square on my arm and breaks my arm.
Ooh.
So
oh, yeah.
He broke my arm.
I remember that.
Yeah. When I was probably 13 years old.
The way you said that, it sounds like you forgot.
I did. You know, it's funny because he was like, I was paying him back, and I was like, for what? But now I know.
Breaking my arm.
Now I know.
So I think Christmas was that opportunity for me to go, you know what? I'm going to get this guy. Yeah. But, yeah, so Christmas, so I was in the Marine Corps, and I was coming home. We could talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but I don't want to divert too much from the story, but I came home one Christmas, I think it was like 2013, mm-hmm. and just visiting everybody. We're at my sister's, and Jared was in wrestling at the time and doing really, really well. He was all-state wrestler. I think he was 17 or 22 and 0. 21 and 0. So he was doing really good, and we were just kind of joking about it and kind of talking about, oh, well, let's go, let's grapple, I can get you. And I was like, okay, well, let's wrestle. So we started wrestling, and I like to choke. I'm good with arm bars, but I like in the Marine Corps, like you do McMap, you always grapple. Yeah. And I was just known for just choking people out,
sure.
Which I don't know if there's a better way to say it, a nicer way to say it, but mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to get him in a rear naked choke.
Yeah.
And I got his back,
got him
in a rear naked choke, and he never tapped. So a few seconds later, he starts twitching. So I let go, and he was out. He had passed out.
Yeah.
So shortly after...
I just remember at the time we were watching Elf, the movie, because it was during Christmas.
Right.
And I was definitely, like, he humbled me for sure, because I was like, I'm 21-0, you know. And, you know, he comes home for leave from the military, and he's like, okay, I'll show you. But, no, he, so the first thing I remember coming back to was the sound of the movie Elf. So Will Ferrell singing... I'm singing in the mall, that part of the movie, and I'm like, what is going on? And then all of a sudden my vision kind of comes back, and I'm like, oh wow, what happened? And so that's the first time I've ever kind of gone out.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't think I think if he knew, he would have let me go. But I think at the time, I remember I was like, oh, what if I drop down and do a somersault and get out of it, you know? And that just sunk it in deeper, and I think immediately I was out.
Oh, my.
But,
it was over in a matter of seconds, and he started twitching, so it's like, oh, no, he's out. So
yeah.
It was just, watching him spring up and kind of, like, in shock, like, where he's at, and he, like, ran out of the room and had to, like, collect himself in, like, the bathroom, like, figure out, like, what's going on, and
yeah.
He came on and was like, what happened?
The family was all like, you almost killed him. It was funny.
That's kind of like in a safe way to do it, too. I mean, you come
as long
back.
As you let go, yes.
Right. Yeah. As long as you let go, then it's all good. Yeah. But you were a wrestler?
I was. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At Eureka High School.
And you said...
That was the end of it. You never wrestled after that?
Yeah, I never.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you were Allstate?
No, I mean, I did well, but no, I did not. I did not go to state.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. But you said so. 21. I think so.
Yeah.
21 times. What was that?
Yeah. I had 21-0 all pins.
Okay.
I did very well. Okay. I did very well. I can't remember what year that was. I think it was my junior year. Freshman
when I was
year
gone because I missed all of it. So
it was my freshman year. Right. It was my freshman year. Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah. I mean. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I was okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was kind of part of the story, too, I guess. Like, you were trying to show him that you can wrestle. And
I think there's always something, too, when you're the bigger brother. Like, it, you always have an edge on him. Yeah. So it's like, I think he doubted himself just going into it. He didn't talk
that
way.
You know what's
but.
Funny is, actually, after that, I lost a match. So you probably did. You humbled me. You're like,
I ruined your streak. If I could take it back, I would. He was really good at wrestling.
Yeah.
Cool. I was proud of him. I had to hear about it from my wife through our nightly calls overseas, but I was proud of him. It was good to see how good he was doing.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Any other stories that you'd like to share growing up? And
well, he did his homework. I did not.
I don't know if you got any.
I don't know if I have any.
We had a crazy childhood. Same mom, different dads, but lived in a lot of different houses. Lived in Washington, Spring Bay, Creve Coeur, Pekin, East Peoria, Eureka. We kind of landed in and finally stayed, and we've been in Eureka ever since, so it's been great. But yeah, we had a crazy childhood. I mean, I got ran over as a kid by my own dad, fell out of the car, and he ran over my foot. Completely accidental. I didn't shut the door all the way. I wasn't wearing a seatbelt because kids used to ride in the front seat.
Sure, sure. That's Jared, crazy, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jared did what?
Got hit by a truck.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Life flighted out of Eureka.
Wow.
I think I was in fifth grade, so I was about 11 years old.
Main Street in Eureka.
Main Street, across the street from CVS is where I threw a snowball at my twin brother. And I was laughing, running away. Because I think it, like, he turned and it, like, hit him in the face. And I was like, oh, no, he's gonna be mad. So I start running.
Oh, my.
And I guess I ran into the road. I don't remember a lot of it. But,
speaking of being life-flighted, so I wasn't ever life-flighted. But when I was, I don't know, a year and a half, there was a search and rescue sent out to find me as a baby. Because my mom couldn't find me. So there was this huge search effort trying to find missing baby James, and I had just crawled behind my dresser in my room, and
wow.
Yeah. And there was this whole search.
Yeah, whole search going on. So mom shared that with me, so it was funny to hear. So
that's crazy.
I don't know if anything came from it, but I think she looked a little harder next time before she called the cops that her baby was missing. But
wow.
Oh man.
He's elusive.
You had to be quiet too. I mean, it's like
I was probably sleeping. I think she said I was napping behind my dresser, so deep sleep. I don't know.
That's pretty crazy.
I don't know if I want to share, but I was gonna. I shared the baseball card story.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, go ahead.
And we can, if you ever, like, when we watch this later, if you want to, like, cut it out.
I'm not worried about it. Yeah. I just feel, every time the story comes up, I'm like, man, I can't believe I did that to him.
Oh, no. It's a funny story, and I have no hard feelings at all because they were just baseball cards. But my grandpa, or I think it was my mom's grandpa, left her a bunch of baseball cards, and she passed on to me. So there was a ton of cards. Mickey Mantle, rookie card, Ty Cobb, just a bunch of Babe Ruth cards. So a lot of really good collectible cards. And I had a little case that had my most valuable cards. I had them valued probably when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And Jared, this was back in the Pokemon craze, so Jared had taken these cards, the stack of cards to school, and traded them away for Pokemon cards. So one of those cards, the Mickey Mantle card itself, and this was probably back in 2001, was worth like $38,000 itself, just that one. So
wow.
But it's a funny story, and I hope he doesn't think that I'm upset with him at all, because they were just cards, and they'd probably still be sitting in my basement right now, just aging. But that's just a funny story, because I think I came across them a year later, like, where's this pack of cards? I'm freaking out. Like, oh, no, what happened to all these cards? And I think Jared, like, I traded those for Pokemon cards. But
yeah, it was, I felt terrible about it. Not at the time, because I didn't know what I was doing. But but I think, a couple years later, you're like, man. And I was like, you're right. Like, I'm so sorry about that. But I still remember who I gave them to, who I traded.
Oh, so where is this guy?
Yeah.
I can't say. I think a lot of people probably know who it is. So
okay.
I won't say, but.
That is funny. So
I remember.
Okay. Interesting. Well, that's something that brothers do, and I think I could see myself doing that with my brother a little bit. I'm the younger brother, so doing stuff that you don't know that is not good, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I mean, he was in second or third grade, so like.
That was young, yeah.
Didn't really know anything.
And
I was 13 or 14, so wasn't a big deal.
Yeah,
just crazy. Cards. But that's all the stories I've got that I can think of.
That's great. Those are really interesting.
I don't think I have any. Those are really good. You hit the good ones, the core ones.
Yeah.
I think.
Wow.
Or core memories.
Core memories.
Core memories. For sure.
Really odd childhood, but.
Wow, and with the being life-lighted, I mean that's crazy. So it's a experience. Yeah, that's a big thing. Very few people have done that. So, yeah.
Well, this goes back to like I've apologized to him and Ben numerous times since getting older and reflecting back on how much of a big brother I was. And if I go back and do it differently, I would. But I was a big brother. I was 7 years older than them. But me and my friends, we'd have fight nights with Jared and Ben. So they were twins. So we'd set up the living room as a boxing ring, and we'd have our TV with the camera recording them and putting it on the TV. And my friends would come over, and one of us would pick Jared, one of us would pick Ben, and then we'd kind of put them up against each other. Mm-hmm. They'd box, and that was just something we would do as
we had
for
our
entertainment.
We had our intro music songs and stuff.
We'd come in, and
it was fun.
And we'd have our rags, and we'd have water bottles to spray them and make them look all sweaty on the TV. And oh, man.
That's such like a fun like growing up memory to
definitely
have.
Definitely a brother just it growing up was fun. Growing up with James and you know my twin brother and just all the siblings, it was a lot of fun. We had fun.
Did you watch Rocky right before that and, like, reenact?
I don't think I've actually ever seen Rocky.
Oh really?
Oh, man.
Believe it or not.
That's
fourth
good.
One's the best one.
So we've talked a little bit about some of those stories, but growing up, too, as you got older, you both decided to join the military, right? Mm-hmm. That is a significant part of your story, your life story. So I thought it would be great if you could share us a little bit about your experience in the military, Air Force, and the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I guess you were probably the first one to join, right, James?
I didn't know when I knew I wanted to join somewhat through high school, but I didn't realize, I guess it was after high school, my initial thought was, okay, I want to join the Marine Corps, but my wife and I were at my dad's 2 Sundays ago, and I came across a picture from a Christmas when I was probably 9 or 10, and I was dressed up in a whole just military uniform, and she's like, oh, so you always wanted to go, and I was like, I guess I didn't even realize it. But I wanted to join when I was 19, but I backed out. The fear of joining kind of scared me, and the fear of the unknown. So I decided not to. 3 years later, I was 22, and I was like, you know what? I'm still doing the same thing. I'm making nothing of myself. I need to join the Marines. So I actually went to the recruiter's office and walked in, and I was always fascinated with cars, engines, and told him, hey, if you can give me 3521, which is a diesel mechanic in the Marine Corps, I'll sign the paperwork right now. So I did, and I remember going home that day, and my girlfriend, now wife, I say, hey, I got a video for you to watch, and I popped in this DVD, and she's like, what are we watching? And it was the Marine Corps boot camp video, and she's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm going to the Marine Corps, and she's like, well, no, you're not, and I was like, I already signed the paperwork. So we got married, still married happily today, 15 years here in October, but that's where it started, and it was just kind of like this. I wanted to do it 3 years ago. I backed out of it, and it's like I knew if I walked out of that recruiter's office, I'd probably do it again. So like I signed the paperwork and then broke it to Angela at that time, and she wasn't the happiest, but it worked out. It's worked out very well. But so I joined at 22, went to boot camp in California, did combat training there after the 13-week boot camp, and then I was stationed in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, for my 4 years, and after training and all that, she moved out there. We lived out there for 4 years. But we always joke that for the first 4 years, we didn't really know each other because I had 3 months of boot camp, I had 3 months of combat training, and then I had my schooling that took 6 months. And then I think it was like 3 months after getting to the fleet, mm-hmm. I got my first deployment. So then I was gone for 6 months. And then as soon as I got back from that deployment, another one was coming up. And it's very difficult to get on deployments. And I ran straight to my first sergeant's office and said, hey, I'd love to go back again. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, just make sure you get with your wife and make sure she's okay with it. So I told her, I was like, hey, well, you don't have many opportunities to do this. She's like, just go for it. Mm-hmm. So I went again just shy of a year for the second one. So in the first 4 years of our marriage, mm-hmm. I think we had only spent like a year, year and a half together.
Wow.
So after the Marine Corps, we got out and came back to Eureka and mm-hmm. Really got to know each other and started a family. Got two boys now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It was good for me because I was going nowhere in life, and the Marine Corps kind of set me on a path to where I am now. And mm-hmm. ultimately, I truly feel like God's got a plan because it all started there. Things happened in the Marine Corps that at that moment in time, I kind of felt like, what's happening? My world's crumbling. And she asked, well, what do you want to do when you get out of here? It's like, well, I might as well stay in being a diesel mechanic. And that ultimately led me to Nussbaum. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's always that path. And if I hadn't bailed out at 19 and joined at 22, mm-hmm. I may not have the life that I have right now. So,
yeah. Would have looked a lot different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is a foundational time to go to as you're growing and kind of a pivot moment where mm-hmm. you could choose to go one way or another, and that set you on a path. Mm-hmm. So what did you appreciate about being in the Marine Corps, or why the Marine Corps and not like another branch like the Air Force?
I think it was just I give Jared slack for joining the Air Force, but I came back and told him, like, mm-hmm. join the Air Force. Like, yeah. you need to join the Air Force. I went to, on my second deployment, I stopped in, I think it was Kuwait, and I went to the Air Force base, and they had a swimming pool and a movie theater, and I'm like, what is this? Like, so I told him about that. Like, they've got everything. Like, you need to go to the Air Force. Their budget's much larger than the Marine Corps, but what I appreciated most was just the fact, like, I truly feel like everybody would benefit from a couple years in the Marine Corps, because right out of high school, you don't know what you're doing. You're kind of lost, mm-hmm. and it kind of forces you to grow up and gain some discipline and mm-hmm. Mature a bit, understand there's more to life than just hanging out with friends.
Yeah.
And then I also created lifelong friends. So I've got a couple friends from the Marine Corps that I deployed with that we talk to monthly, and we meet once a year to kind of hang out and just see how things are going. So
yeah.
some lifelong friendships that I don't think you would get anywhere else than from the Marine Corps. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. So altogether, that was about...
That was just 4 years.
4 years.
And I got out after 4 years. So,
okay.
Yeah, I almost went back, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 years after being out. Mm-hmm. I talked to a recruiter about potentially going guard or active reserve, but then I decided not to. Let's just focus on Nussbaum and my family outside of it. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we'll get to the whole Nussbaum side of things, mm-hmm. but yeah, keep that in your mind.
Yeah.
I'll come back to that, I think.
Sounds good.
But overall, you wouldn't change it.
No.
You enjoyed
it. I feel like there's a path there for, excuse me, there's a path laid out for a reason. And if I would have joined at 19, I wouldn't be the person I am today. Mm-hmm. And I truly don't know if I'd be here at Nussbaum. And if I could go back and say, hey, join at 19, I wouldn't, because I don't know if that would have led me to here. And mm-hmm. Some things happened in the Marine Corps that at that moment in time just crushed me. And I remember talking to my wife, like, when I joined the Marine Corps, I was competitive, and it was just like, well, I'm always competitive. But when I joined the Marine Corps, it's like, I'm doing this for life. I'm going 20 years. I'm going to retire as a Marine. And things kind of played out to where it wasn't working out that way. Some things happened on my second deployment that kind of closed that door on me. And it was like, I was questioning, like, why is this happening? And I'm so glad it did, because it led me to here. Mm-hmm. And
a lot of the leadership things that you, like the position you are in now, the Marine Corps set you up very well to be in those leadership places. Like, I feel like that makes a really good fit, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
No, I truly do. And you don't think about it at that moment in time, but yeah, there are little stepping stones that lead you to where you are. And
yeah,
all the challenges build you up.
Mm. Yeah. There's a lot of business books that kind of like take those ideas and bring it into what does that look like in business. But yeah, it's all about working together as a team. Like, you have to function together, and you know, you're doing everything together, and we talked about shared suffering, like how that builds, you know, friendships is when you suffer together. And that's, yeah, learning how to guide a team is, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool. Tell us about your experience.
Well, I was kind of in a similar boat where I did join at 19, but I was definitely on a path of like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not really sure. I had gone to ICC for like half a semester because I was thinking about becoming an RN, a registered nurse, because that's what our mom is. And at the time, I think halfway through, I was like, I don't know if this is for me. And I ended up kind of in between jobs. I left Conklin's, and I really wasn't doing too much. I was sleeping like 17 hours a day. I mean, I want to say that's an exaggeration, but there was one day I actually did do it.
Are you kidding?
No, yeah, for real. So it was, I was like, man, I need to do this for myself. Yeah. Like, I need to do this for myself because I have no direction or really any determination to, you know, to get out of bed. So
that's outstanding.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to skim over that. 17 hours, like nonstop.
Yeah. Yep. I wasn't sick or anything. I just was tired.
It's comfy.
Yeah. Comfy. Yeah.
Real
so
comfy.
Yeah. And, okay. And James actually, he keeps reminding me each day, like, hey, you know, don't love sleep. What is that?
Proverbs 20, 13, I believe, but it talks about, loving sleep and
so
not loving sleep, or you could be poor and just not poor as far as monetary gain, but yeah, just in life. So
yeah, I am ecstatic that I decided to make that decision for myself to kind of get myself on the right path. And and like James said, I think it really was God's plan for me to end up here. I actually didn't want to get out. I was the same as James, where I wanted to be a lifer in the Air Force. Some things led to another. I ended up at Rapid City, and I will admit, I was not a fan of up there. It's just so cold. It's so cold. I went ice fishing. It was a good time, but I didn't want to. I figured, you know, let's come home, grow some roots.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad I did, because I met my wife, and now we have a beautiful daughter who's going to be turning three soon. Wow. So I joined the Air Force because James said, don't join the Marines.
they got movie theaters. You got to go to Air Force.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
I know it was difficult. I'm not,
for sure. Yeah. But, well, I mean, I'm in agreement, to be honest with you, but, I mean, I'm still in, I left active duty and, came home, and then I joined the Air National Guard the next day that I left active duty, so there's no break in service.
Mm.
And so now I'm with the Air National Guard. I was at the 182nd Air Wing in Peoria. It's more like Bartonville, but Peoria. And then I'm actually cross-training to logistics plans here in May. And we'll be going to a new base, the 183rd, in Springfield. So I'll be doing logistics plans now.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
So what does that look like?
I guess it's along the lines of, like, planning deployments. So everything from personnel to freight, equipment, how many weapons do we need, and anything really, what location we're going to for training. The guy I talked to, he's it sounded like he got to pick where annual training was going to be, which was pretty cool, so I'm excited about that. So I'm still in. 10 years strong.
Wow, 10 years. And then your role in that, you'll be like trainings every once in a while because you're working here, but then you also will go off and do training every couple of weeks, or what does that look like?
Yep. So so it'll be one weekend each month, and usually it's at the beginning of each month. Mm-hmm. So here's coming up on May. It'll be May 2nd or mm-hmm. 3rd. And then there's 2 weeks out of the year that they will do annual training, and that's kind of just a big training event for everybody to get spun up on mm-hmm. their jobs and their just to stay ready.
Mm, that's cool. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, 10 years strong. So still, you know, lots of lessons that you've learned and will continue to.
Oh, absolutely.
Learn. Any of those stick out to you? Things that you help you in your job today, or lessons of life?
I'm sure there's a lot. I can't think of any right now off the top of my head, but yeah. I'm sure there's a lot.
No, that's great. Yeah, keep mulling it over, maybe come back to it.
I feel like mental fortitude is a huge one. Like yeah. you don't think about it, but a lot of the stuff we do, no matter how physically demanding it is, like there's so much of a mental aspect to it. And I think the military, no matter what branch you choose, it mm-hmm. teaches you that. It teaches you how to deal with things that can be a struggle that you don't want to work through, but then you get through it and you're like, okay, I can do this. So kind of overcoming challenges and hardships in your life. I think the military sets you up pretty well to deal with stuff like that. So
definitely. Yeah, I would say, I would definitely say that it gives you that, the ability to kind of understand your own limits and provides you with a lot of like determination to like see things through.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, my image of military, and I know there's a lot more of boot camp, is you're getting yelled at while you have to do some really difficult task, mm-hmm. you know, but building that fortitude to continue when it's the most difficult, and that's a skill that can be used at any time, mm-hmm. you know.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, it's cool. So coming back to Nussbaum and getting the Nussbaum, James, how did you find Nussbaum? So you came out of the military and you're wanting to work as a diesel technician. Mm-hmm. How'd you end up here?
So I was getting out, wasn't quite sure initially what to do, but talking to my wife, we had decided why get out of wrenching, let's stay a diesel tech. So I learned a lot in the Marine Corps, but the bulk of the wrenching happened stateside. And I got deployed twice, so I didn't do a ton of wrenching. I was confident in my abilities, but I knew there was more to learn. So I reached out to DPET at Illinois Central College, and they take 20 applicants a year. So I drove back quickly one weekend to meet with the program director and put in my application, shared my transcripts from high school, which were terrible, but tried to share with him, like, hey, I'm a different man now.
Yeah.
This is not a reflection of me. Well, I get that all the time, but he gave me a shot, and I went to DPET. And very quickly, in the first semester, I believe it was the first semester, Nussbaum had reached out. Jeremy Stickling reached out and said, hey, we need two technicians. So they let me know, hey, there's a fleet out of Hudson, Illinois that's looking for a technician. Would you be interested? And the Marine Corps was paying for my schooling, so it came like, hey, sponsorship. I was like, well, I don't need it for the funding, but I really didn't want to work for a fleet. When you're going through school, you have this mindset like, hey, I want to tear apart engines. I want to rip apart transmissions. Like, you want the big work. until you get into it and you realize, well, that's not really what it's all about. But yeah. at that moment, it's like, well, I don't really want to work for a fleet and I don't know anything about Nussbaum. Thankfully, my sister-in-law knew a Smitgall that used to work in operations. Yeah. And she was like, no, she works at Nussbaum. She absolutely loves it. Best place she's ever worked. James at least has to go in for an interview.
Yeah.
And I remember pulling up. It was before we had these new offices. It was just the original. And I remember pulling up and thinking, like, what is this? Like, what is a fleet? Like, I didn't even know what a trucking fleet was. I was sitting in front of, like, a ski lodge. Like, it just it blew me away. And I walked in, and within 5 minutes of talking with Jeremy, it's just, like, the culture and the feel. Like, I felt at home, and I was like, I've got to work here. But I played my cards. Like, I wasn't that interested, even though I was probably smiling ear to ear. Met Tony. Tony gave me a tour of the new shop, it was a new shop back then as well, probably only a couple years old. I remember sitting down with Jeremy at the very end and letting him know, well, hey, I'll need to go home and talk with my wife, see if this is right fit for me. And I remember calling my wife the second I got out to my car, like, I've got to work here. This place is amazing. Wow. And yeah, that's kind of what got me here. And
yeah.
Yeah, 10 years later. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, love it.
I love that. And now you're director of fleet service.
Yep.
Right. So you talked about going through a couple different roles to where you are now. But what does that look like? What does a director of fleet service do?
Every day is different. Every day there's a new challenge. But trying to be there as much as I can for support for the teams that are out there. Whether it's Shanahan, it's Hudson East. Now we got three locations. We've got several managers. So I try to remind myself what's most important. That's getting with the people. So I try to make my rounds each morning and see everyone. There's a bit more teams now. It used to be easier. But I try to see everybody at the East Shop, West Shop. Check in with Roadside, check with the in-house service team here, just kind of see how they're doing, say hello, be available, and just try to make sure that they get to know me a bit more on a personal level, so try to have some conversations. And then when I'm tapped in on the computer, I'm just trying to look for areas of opportunity. I'm a wanderer. My work in Genius is wonder and tenacity. So I'm always looking for areas of opportunity that we can improve. So just trying to work with the shop managers on, hey, can we tweak this a little bit, or could we be doing this better? Ultimately, how can we serve the drivers better provide better service? So I don't really know how else to explain it, but just trying to see where we can improve and provide better service for the drivers, communication for ops, and be there for the shop crew.
I mean, providing that innovation, that someone that is, you know, if your schedule is always changing tires or looking at engines, you don't have time, you need someone to look at those areas of opportunity to improve. So that sounds like really interesting. And for someone like you, you're always wondering and like, how can I make these things better? And has it been a good fit? Do you enjoy that?
I really do enjoy it. There are some days where the days can be long and stressful, but I love what I do. I love the people I work with. I really enjoy getting out and having the interactions with the technicians, the roadside crew, service staff. So it's just, it's fun with the relationships we get to build. I go up to Shanahan every 3 weeks and get to see them. And it's fun. So yeah, I love what I do. I love the people I work with. And it has its challenges, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
That's cool. Then, so you referred Jared, right? Is that what happened, or how did you end up at Nussbaum, Jared?
Yes. So, actually, originally, when I got out, I did not want to work. I just wanted to be. So I had bought a duplex in Peoria and was renting out one side and living in the other. And my plan was to go to school, use the GI Bill, and kind of live off of that. Shortly after getting out, I realized that is not sustainable. Probably shouldn't do that. And so, you know, I was kind of on the job hunt. I think I was still in, actually, at the time. And I talked to James, and James said, hey, why don't you check out Nussbaum? It's a great culture. Everybody, you know, it's family oriented. Everybody takes care of each other here. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I looked into it, and same thing. I mean, I was blown away, especially coming from the military, where things are kind of—it's like a top-down approach. Actually, I have when I first got here, I remember when I met Mr. Nussbaum, and I stood up because normally you stand up for officers.
Right.
You snap to attention.
I didn't snap to attention. I wasn't like that, but I mean, I definitely. I stood up and I said, this is a great company you have here, sir. And he said, I won't forget it. He said, I was like, it's a great company we have here. He's like, we all work hard to. But yeah, he emphasized how it's everyone and not just himself. And that was different from, you know, the military, where it's like top down, where it kind of seems like you have those higher level NCOs who are like, hey, go do this. It doesn't. There's not a lot of room for, hey, you know, hey, I think this could be better. This could, and I'm also wonder and tenacity. So In my role as a dedicated account manager, I like to do the same thing where I'm looking for new innovative kind of routes or, you know, within the confines of the freight that they provide us. Yeah, I mean, I love what I do here. Mm. It's fantastic. Nussbaum's incredible. Mm. And, you know, as a dedicated account manager, you get to balance a couple things. You get to balance being a driver manager where you're advocating mm-hmm. for the driver, and then you get to, you know, balance the customer side of things where you have to advocate for the customer, and then also you're looking at Nussbaum's, you know, profitability side of things mm-hmm. and efficiency. And so you get to do all three of those things, and it's fantastic. I mm-hmm. love it.
And before that, you were doing more of the driver manager role, or what?
CAC.
CAC, customer account coordinator.
Sorry, it's been a little bit. Yep. So you were a CAC.
Correct, yep.
Before that.
And that was fantastic as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, joining as a CAC, they've got a good group. Good group of people over there.
Good snacks, I've heard.
Good snacks, yeah. They always got the. I take a peek over there. I mean, try to see the guy.
Am I still welcome?
Yeah.
I do kind of walk in there like that too, like hey. But it's great.
Yeah, and out there. That makes it a good fit too. Like moving over to an account manager where multiple roles rolled up into one. Question I had on here was to ask about. What is good service, like providing good service? And I think that's a lot of what you do. And what does that look like?
Providing good service, I would say the biggest thing is communication. So if I'm able to, I mean, I like to keep my inbox at zero as much as I can, which I think James is the same way. I mark them all, and I make sure I get back to somebody, mm-hmm. even if it's a day later. I make mm-hmm. sure it's I try to get back to them as quick as I can, mm-hmm. and with accurate information. Mm-hmm. I think the customer just appreciates the fact that hey, like I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. It's the same with the drivers. Hey, I'm here for you. I'm your biggest advocate. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And then same, even if it's an email where you color code the loads and say, hey, this is green for good. It's okay. You don't have to worry about that one. And then you color code, you know, one of them red and say, hey, we got to watch this one or something. Even if it's something as small as that, I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Those things are extra that people can be surprised about. Oh, they didn't have to spend the time to do that.
Yeah.
So that's great. So this last part of the podcast as we wrap up is a little bit about purpose, and the motto is purpose driven. So to talk about that for both of you, what would you say it means to be purpose driven?
I feel like it's what drives you. It's your inner purpose. It's what's driving you on the inside. And I always jump back to Nussbaum's mission and vision statement. We're here to honor God, and we want to positively impact the lives of everyone we interact with. So, that's driving me forward in the way that I'm doing things now. I've had a big shift in the last few years where I'm really trying to take heart to that. I'm trying to pour into people. I'm trying to set my ego aside and do things that are God-honoring. Mm-hmm. And there may be things initially or a couple of years ago where I mm-hmm. Would want to kind of stand on my hill and say, this works for the shop, this works for us, but really what works best for the drivers and what mm-hmm. can work for operations as well. And yeah, it just changed my outlook on things and the way that I perceive certain challenges now. It may be a bigger lift for us initially, but how does it impact others outside of our mm-hmm. circle? So. Yeah, I just look at that purpose-driven and aspect of my day is it's mm-hmm. it's changed greatly over the last couple of years, and I want to do things that are God-honoring and set my ego to the side.
That's cool. I like that a lot. Setting my ego to the side. I have an ego. We all do. And then for the business standpoint too, how do the drivers and the shop work together? You know, it's not just one person you're making the decision for, but multiple people, so that's really good. Yeah,
it's really good. Yeah, it's gonna be hard to follow up. I Yeah, I would say very similar. Yeah, I just being able to be cohesive as a team to come up with the best outcome for everyone. Mm-hmm. Like he said, it's easy to kind of stand on your own hill, right? And mm-hmm. be like, well, you know, my account, for example, my account's doing well. This one's not. Well, that's not exactly purpose driven. I want to make sure that I'm helping out anywhere I can, mm-hmm. and it's not about just one account versus the other. It's mm-hmm. Just the cohesiveness of everyone being able to work together and help each other out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of what drives me here is just being able to help others.
Yeah. And that goes back to the story you shared with Brent walking up and snapping to attention. Yeah. That it's, he said, it's our company.
Absolutely.
And that it's not just about the decisions I make, but it's about all of us. So that's great. I love that. I'm going to remember that. And I'll remember that picture of you too standing up. Yeah. That's a really great image. So that's cool. Last question, and then we'll be done, is what piece of advice would you give to your younger self? When you look back, little James, little Jared, what would you tell them?
And this is guaranteed that we'll actually listen?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can tell them, but they're not going to listen. Yeah.
If I could tell myself one thing, and I knew they'd listen to it, and I keep going back to a couple of years ago, because I feel like I've found God again recently, and it's changed the way that I approach life. And if I could go back, I would literally tell myself just to put God first. Before, it was always save money. Like what you buy from 16 when you got your first job to 20, you don't have any of that. Like the money's just wasted. So it was always like, hey, be mindful of what you're saving. But it's when you put God first, you're looking at contentment, and that it's going to be there then. So I look at the relationships that I've built or maintained, not really built, but and one of those relationships that I've lost. And just putting God first and picking up the Bible, it puts into perspective our life here and how much larger it is in ourselves. We're selfish creatures, and I could be pretty selfish. And if I could remind myself when I was much younger to put God first, hopefully it work in my favor. And those that I hopefully impacted in a negative way would have brought it up. So yeah, I'd say put God first.
That's great. Yeah, it's so true.
What I would say to my younger self was to save money. To invest in the stock market, but also
forget relationships. Yeah.
But no, I genuinely would say the same thing. Yeah. Put God first.
Yeah.
I think I was a little slow to my own I would tell my younger self to put God first.
I'm very impressed, I mean, by both you guys, and just from the telling the stories, I didn't expect to laugh this much, and also the advice that you guys had, I didn't expect to learn. That sounds bad. I learned a lot from you guys. I'll say it like that. Very positive. I really enjoyed talking with you and hearing about how you want to put God first, put our egos to the side.
Definitely.
That's something for all of us listening. So, no, I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. It has.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Well, thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. Any shout outs you guys want to do?
The infamous Jared.
Rusty and Ty wanted me to shout them out for some reason. So I'll shout them out.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Your 3-year-old daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Your wife.
Yeah. Them.
They're not watching.
No. I've got nobody to shout out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no. If I could be corny, the only thing I would shout out, like we talked a lot about certain things in our life, and I think a lot of it plays off of our mom. He went to be a nurse. I did the same thing at 19.
You did
at least half a semester. I did like 2 weeks. I remember going to a couple movies at the movie theater between classes, and realized, what am I doing? But there was a lot, like that we got from our mom watching her.
Yeah.
She was a mother of five, and she went through some hardships with my dad, with his dad. And she kind of showed us that drive. I think we got our tenacity from her.
Hmm.
And no, if I had to give any shout out, it'd be to my mom for being an example for us and showing us what hard work does. Hmm. And yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. She worked very hard.
Hmm.
Very, very hard. Yeah.
Man.
Shout out to mom.
Awesome. Sounds like an awesome woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, thank you to Daniel doing audio, video, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. Until next time, stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hey, everyone. This is Caleb from Nussbaum Recruiting, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit NussbaumJobs.com. Hope to talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into the conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.